Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven, stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Very Bad Facts, and today we're going to be talking about the Bill of Rights, and we'll get into a little bit of discussion about the Second Amendment. But before we get started, guys, just want to let everybody know that we have a call-in number at 718-508-9883, and if you've got feelings about the Bill of Rights or any of the amendments, doesn't have to just be the Second, could be any, or the Constitution in general, feel free to call in and let us know how you feel about it. But today we're going to be talking about the Bill of Rights specifically, and we'll get into some discussion of the Constitution. Now, for those of you unfamiliar with the Constitution, and if you're in America, I can't imagine how you would be unfamiliar with it. It goes a little something like this. Starts out a little something like this. We the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. That's how the preamble goes, guys. This is how it begins. This is just the beginning. And from there, we get into the various articles. We start with Article 1, which is the article that governs the legislative body of the United States. We move to Article 2, which discusses the powers of the executive branch. Then we move to Article 3, which discusses the powers of the judicial branch, so the various branches of government that we have. We then get to the fourth article, which talks about the relationship between the states. We also have the mode of amendment in Article 5, how things can be added to the Constitution. And this is, of course, a simplification. And we will, of course, get to the Bill of Rights, but this is a simplification. If you're interested, you can actually look at ConstitutionUS.com to get an entire actual whole copy of the Constitution at your fingertips. I recommend it to anybody who wants to bone up on their constitutional knowledge. We move to Article 6, which discusses how debt, national supremacy, and other oaths of office will be discussed within the government. Then we move to Article 7, which talks about the ratification of laws in government and how that is to be done. And, of course, it is the ratification of the Constitution itself. We have letters of transmittal. We reach the amendments to the Constitution. And this is the preamble to the Bill of Rights. Congress of the United States begun and held at the city of New York on Wednesday, the 4th of March, 1789. The conventions of a number of the states having at the time of their adopting the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added, and as extending the ground of public confidence in the government will best ensure the beneficent ends of its institution. This is the beginning of the Constitution. Or I should say the Bill of Rights itself. Now, the conventions of the number of states having at the time of their, adopting the Constitution expressed a desire in order to prevent misconstruction or abuse of its powers that further declaratory and restrictive clauses should be added. Resolved by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress, assembled two-thirds of both houses concurring that the following articles be proposed to the legislators of several states as amendments to the Constitution of the United States. All or any of which articles, when ratified by three-fourths of said legislators, to be valid to all intents and purposes as part of the said Constitution. So this is describing to us how amendments are to be made. Now, articles, in addition to an amendment of the Constitution of the United States of America proposed by Congress and ratified by the legislatures of several states pursuant to the fifth article of the original Constitution. Article the first, after the first enumeration required by the first article of the Constitution, there shall be one representative for every 30,000 until the number shall amount to 100, and so on and so forth. And this is describing how people shall be represented and how articles will be voted upon. So as we move forward here, let us get to the First Amendment, one that many people are probably most familiar with. The First Amendment is one that we like to throw around quite a bit today. It's one of the most popular amendments that we have, the freedom of expression and religion. We throw this around all the time. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people to peaceably to assemble, to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Now, one thing that's interesting about the First Amendment, a lot of people like to use they like to use the First Amendment to excuse actions that are really inexcusable. For example, recently, it wasn't so long ago, I should say, over the last couple of years, in fact, but we had people doing what we, well, claiming that they were expressing their First Amendment rights while laying waste to, you know, basically where they lived, homes that they lived in. And this was a very touchy subject for a while. Socially, you know, we had some people saying, oh, you know, they're expressing their rights. They're expressing their freedom of speech, freedom of expression. Key element within the First Amendment that we don't often point to enough, and that is the right of the people to peaceably assemble. Guys, peaceably assemble, not tear ass through your town and burn it to the damn ground, but peaceably assemble. And some people, to be fair, have used the First Amendment for great things. Great things, tremendous things. The March on Washington by Martin Luther King and many of his followers, and even the Freedom Riders, used the First Amendment in a way that was not only but also inspiring and wonderful and had tremendous impact on our society today. So let's be clear. When we talk about the First Amendment, freedom of expression and freedom of speech does not mean just being able to do whatever the hell you want to do. There are still consequences for everything that you do and everything that you say. So, for example, if you go to work tomorrow, you tell your boss to stick a banana in his tailpipe or to kick rocks, you have the right to say those things. Because you have the right to say something doesn't mean there aren't consequences for what you say. Similar to me, myself, just because I have the right to say things on my show doesn't mean I don't have somebody I got to answer to. I have people to answer to. So just because you have the right to say things doesn't mean there are not consequences for the things that you say and the things that you do. There are consequences. You also have the right, according to the First Amendment, to petition the government for a redress of grievances. If you feel that there is a law that is unfair, you have the right to protest that law. And our government protects your right to do that. The First Amendment protects your right to protest the law. It doesn't protect your rights to be destructive of personal property or public property. Injure other people as a consequence of your expression of your rights, because that infringes upon another person's rights. And as we go through the Constitution, it's going to make a lot more sense why those things aren't covered in the Bill of Rights. So let's move to the next one, probably the most controversial as of today, the most controversial and touchy subject of discussion today is the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So this is an amendment that's been highly debated for years and years and years by scholars, by politicians, by everyday citizens alike, the uneducated, the educated, everybody has something to say about the Second Amendment. But the great thing about the Second Amendment, you want to know what the greatest thing about it is that it's written down. That, yeah, it's written down on a piece of paper. There's a piece of paper with it written on there. And it's really kind of hard to misconstrue the Second Amendment. So let's break it down like we did the First Amendment. The Second Amendment states that a well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. So the Second Amendment allows for a well-regulated militia to be maintained. Now, obviously, we don't really have a militia today. We do have police officers. And as far as what a militia was used for in this period in time, it was often used as a way of keeping law and order and protecting the community. So you might be able to now, if you look at it just right, say that the police are a well-regulated militia. They are state-run. You know, I mean, so the government, you know, is responsible for supplying them and equipping them and the like. Well, here's where it gets, here's where things get fuzzy for people. This is the next part that gets fuzzy for people. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Well, what does that mean? It means that you, as a legal citizen of the United States, you as a citizen of this country, have the right to keep and bear weapons. And your rights shall not be infringed upon. That is written and enshrined in the Constitution of your government. The government, which was founded by the people, for the people, and of the people, then bear arms shall not be infringed. Does that mean that people with arms are allowed to do whatever they want? No, it does not. It does not mean that. Does that mean that just because you have the right to bear arms, you can go anywhere you want to and do anything you want with them? No, it does not mean that. It does not mean you're allowed to go and murder people. But it does mean that you're allowed to keep and bear, which means hold, carry, weapons. Arms refers to rifles or armaments, weapons. It doesn't really specify. Now, exactly what kind of arms you're supposed to. It doesn't say you can have a bullet, you can have one gun that shoots one bullet. It doesn't say you can have a musket. It doesn't say you can have a cannon. It doesn't specify exactly what kind of arms you're allowed to keep. It simply says you have the right to keep and bear arms. And this is a very important, now one thing that is very important to say about the Second Amendment is that while it doesn't specify what sort of arms you're allowed to carry, it also doesn't specify what sort of arms you're not allowed to carry and have. It doesn't say either one. But what is most important about the Second Amendment is the reason for its existence. The Second Amendment exists. Well, if you're unfamiliar with what happened during the period of the American colonies, the original 13 colonies, and British occupation of those colonies, when British troops patrolled the colonies, they confiscated people's weapons. It was illegal in certain places after a while, after a period of time, after a period of unrest in the colonies, it was illegal for people to own weapons. They weren't allowed to own them. The soldiers from Britain attempted to confiscate all these weapons. They, of course, failed to confiscate these weapons. Otherwise, we would still be a British protectorate. But we are not. We are our own country now. And one might say that the right to bear arms is what allowed and sustained. Now we move to the third one. And if anybody wants to call in and you have things to say, you feel very strongly about any of the amendments we're talking about, feel free to call in 718-508-9883. You can call in anytime and talk. I will listen to you. But We get to Article 3, the quartering of soldiers. No soldier shall in time of peace be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Now, this is an interesting one as well. We don't talk about the Third Amendment very often because, well, it's really not a problem anymore. But it was a problem for a while when British soldiers were patrolling the colonies. They would often storm into people's homes and demand that they put them up and provide them food and lodging and supplies and the like. And these people weren't really given a choice in the matter. They simply came in, stayed, confiscated whatever they wanted, and left. So there's a reason why we have some of these laws after all, isn't it? And, of course, I want to circle back before we continue to the Fourth Amendment. I want to circle back to the original amendment, the first, the freedom of expression and religion. There is a reason that that amendment is first and that it is so important. And the reason that it is first is because this is what initially many of the colonists had come to America for in the first place, to escape religious persecution and the ability to speak freely. They wanted to escape censorship, and they wanted to escape state-instituted religion. So many people, because of their religious background, came to the United States, and these people came from a variety of different religious backgrounds. They all came to the United States. They came to be came to this country all chasing the same thing, and that thing was freedom and the ability to believe in whatever the hell they felt like believing in and the ability to do so without worrying that the government might steal their ability to do it. But it also they also came here for the right to speak their mind and to pursue ideas without fear of being censored by the government. So it was important, I felt like, to really flesh that out a little bit more. The First Amendment is often talked about for freedom of speech, but let's not forget that it's also – it's so much more than that. It's so much more than just freedom of speech. The Fourth Amendment in the Bill of Rights is regards to search and seizure. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue but upon probable cause supported by oath or affirmation or particularly subscribing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Again, this is something that was instituted after incidents with soldiers coming into people's homes and searching their houses and taking things because they felt like it, because they wanted to. Seizing what they called contraband, demanding people give them goods against their will. So this amendment is good. It protects you from being illegally searched, and it protects you from being seized by government agents or from your property being confiscated against your will without warrants. Very important. The Fifth Amendment is the rights of persons. Persons shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime, unless on a presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces or in the militia, when in actual service and in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject for the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life and limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Now, this is the Fifth Amendment, and we spout this amendment off all the time today. It's even become a part of popular American culture to say, "I plead the Fifth." Indicating that you will not incriminate yourself in a situation in which you could be incriminated. The right to protect yourself from being a witness against yourself. So you shall not be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against yourself. So you will not be forced to incriminate yourself in any way should you desire not to. You may plead for your Fifth Amendment rights. You may say, "I would like to invoke my Fifth Amendment rights to not incriminate myself, and I demand a trial of my peers." And this article 5 of the Bill of Rights, or the Fifth Amendment, guarantees this. It guarantees that you will get your trial. It guarantees that you, well, it doesn't guarantee you'll get your trial. Let me rephrase that. It guarantees you that you will get due process of law. So you will go through a process in which defend yourself before your accuser. You have the rights. You have the rights to not incriminate yourself, and you have the right to having your property and your reputation preserved in a court of law. Now, Article 6 is much more specifically aimed towards the rights of someone accused and your rights during a criminal prosecution. So in all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed. The district shall have been previously ascertained by law and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. So this guarantees you the right to face someone who is accusing you of a crime in court. This is a very important amendment, and one that people really don't – I think a lot of people take this for granted. Your right to a fair trial is something that a lot of people have taken for granted in this country. Your right to face your accusers and your right to defend yourself in a court of law selected with a jury selected from amongst your peers. This was not always the case. Court proceedings used to be held, as the name suggests, in royal court, where a king or a noble who might not give a damn about you or your crime might just be able to be bribed, or might just be in a bad mood and might just say, to hell with this guy, I don't care if he's guilty or not, to the prison or to the executioner's block. No witnesses necessary. I mean, of course, in some cases, depending on where you are and what time we're talking about, of course there were witnesses, and of course there were other ways of defending yourself before a nobleman or a king in court. But oftentimes, cases brought into court, You didn't even have the right to speak before being addressed by your betters. So never take for granted your Sixth Amendment rights, because they were not always so. And in some places in the world, people still don't get the same Sixth Amendment rights that you get here. Article 7 of the Bill of Rights, or Amendment 7, regards civil trials. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of common law. And this is just civil suits. This handles civil suits. Anything, any controversy that exceeds the value of $20 shall be preserved and tried by a jury. You know, somebody owes you money, they don't want to pay you, you got to take up a civil court. It's your Eighth Amendment, your Seventh Amendment rights, I should say, to take that person to court, to your local court. Now, your Eighth Amendment further guarantees in criminal cases: excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. This is a very important amendment. Again, they're all important, but this one is very critical to any discussion of the amendments, because a lot of people take this one for granted, too. Not necessarily just the bail and excessive fines, but cruel and unusual punishments. Your protection from torture was something that was not always guaranteed when you went to jail. When we think about interrogation in a jail, we think about the movies. You know, you got a guy in a room, it's good cop, bad cop, there's a guy flashing a light in your face. Let me explain to you all what a interrogation could be like in Spain during the Spanish Inquisition. An interrogation could be like this. I strap you down to a table and I peel off your fingernails and rip your skin off until you tell me what I want to know, whether you're guilty or not. I torture you until you confess. Similarly, in other parts of the world, torture has been implemented. It's been implemented pretty much all over the world at many different times throughout history. Interrogation didn't mean let's sit down in a room and me and the other guy, we're going to play good cop, bad cop. He'll ask you a question, then I'll try to scare you and ask you a question. No, when these people tried to scare you, they got cruel. Thumb screws, water, dunking your head underwater, that's light. We're talking getting whipped, getting pieces of your body ripped off, cut up, beaten savagely, public square humiliations, cruel and unusual punishments. People got very, very creative when they wanted to find out what they wanted to know. So never underestimate and take for granted your Eighth Amendment rights, because they protect you from that kind of crazy stuff. Article 9, the Ninth Amendment, the unenumerated rights. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. This is very important. This protects your rights under the Constitution. Article 10, the Tenth Amendment, the reserved powers. The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution nor prohibited by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. And this is very important. The reserved powers refers to powers that are not given directly to the government of the United States by the Constitution and are not given directly to your state governments. These are your rights, specifically your rights. And, of course, beyond the Bill of Rights, we have a number of amendments ranging from the Ninth Amendment, the power of the government, the power of states to sue one another, the 12th Amendment, the election of the president, the 13th Amendment regarding slavery and involuntary servitude, neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted shall exist in the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Congress shall have the power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Of course, this is very historically important. An unprecedented turn of events with the 13th Amendment. The 14th Amendment, rights guaranteed, privileges and immunities of citizenship, due process and equal protection. You have your 15th Amendment, the rights of citizens to vote. The 16th regarding the income tax. 17th regarding popular election of senators. 18th prohibition of intoxicating liquors. We saw how long that lasted, right? Of course, the 19th Amendment is another very popular amendment. If you're not familiar with it, it regards the women's suffrage rights, their ability to vote. The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by any state on account of sex. Congress shall have power to enforce this article by appropriate legislation. Each one of these articles is referred to in such a way. Of course, the 20th Amendment, terms of president, vice president, members of Congress, and presidential vacancy. This is one we should probably revisit, guys. Yeah, probably ought to revisit this one. Congress only required to assemble once in every year, and such meetings shall begin at noon on the third day of January, unless they shall be by law appointed a different day. The 20th Amendment really hits home for me. Term limits. We got to go back to that. Of course, we have which was a repeal of the 18th Amendment. And if you remember what the 18th Amendment was, it's the prohibition of alcohol. Yeah, the United States, that didn't last long. They decided to get rid of that. Government decided to get that. And then we have the 22nd Amendment. Thank a couple of our presidents for that. Presidential tenure. No person shall be elected to the office of president more than twice. And no person who's held the office of president or acted as president for more than 2 years of a term to which some other person was elected shall be elected to the office of president more than once. Yes, we've had people be president 3 times. We saw how that worked out, didn't we? The 23rd Amendment, presidential electors for the District of Columbia. And this talks about, of course, representatives in D.C. specifically. Great amendment. The 26th, the reduction of voting age qualification. The rights of citizens who are 18 years of age or older to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States at any or any state on account of age. So 18, voting age, legal. You can see, if you check out your Constitution, you can see all these rights that you have. And aren't they amazing? Aren't these rights great? They are great. What I also want to talk about is we've covered quite a bit of ground. That's actually kind of surprised that nobody's called in to talk about their rights. Great. You guys like your rights. I'm glad. I like my rights too. And of course, guys, this gives us perfect. This gives us the perfect time, the perfect moment, I should say, to also take a look of another tremendous American document, a great piece of American history, the Declaration of Independence, which really was, you know, the start of it all, right? The beginning of a great idea. Of course, you might argue that, you know, you might actually argue more or less that that the first ships that set sail for what would become the American colonies really were the launching point, the creation of all of our laws, everything that was to come. They were the first step, right? That hunger for exploration, the desire of the human spirit to find freedom wherever they go. The Declaration of Independence, though, quite important, as it is the foundation, the keystone, if you will, to the later writing of the Constitution. Consider your Declaration of Independence to be the rough draft of the Constitution. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into it. In Congress, on July 4th, 1776, the unanimous declaration of the 13 United States of America, of course, for those of you who are really familiar with your American history, you would know that there were originally 13 colonies, but were now states. When in the course of human events, it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. A decent respect to the opinions of mankind requires that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. Now, this is, of course, a discussion. I'm not going to, thrust anything upon you. This is actually the document, the Declaration of Independence. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal and that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to in happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes, and accordingly all experience hath shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evinces a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. Such has been the patient sufferance of these colonies, and such is now the necessity which constrains them to alter their former systems of government. The history of the present king of Great Britain is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over these states. To prove this, let facts be submitted to a candid world. He has refused to assent to his laws, the most wholesome and necessary for the public good. He has forbidden his governors to pass laws of immediate and pressing importance unless suspended in their operation till his assent should be obtained. And when so suspended, he has utterly neglected to its other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people, unless those people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, and a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyranny only. He has called together legislative bodies at places unusual, uncomfortable, and distant from the depository of their public records, and for the sole purpose of fatiguing them into compliance with his measures. He has dissolved representative houses repeatedly for opposing with manly firmness his invasions on the rights of the people. He has refused for a long time after such disillusions to cause others to be elected, whereby the legislative powers, incapable of annihilation, have returned to the people at large for their exercise, the state remaining in the meantime exposed to all the dangers of invasion from without and convulsions within. He has endeavored to prevent the population of these states for that purpose obstructing the laws for naturalization of foreigners, refusing to pass others to encourage their migrations hither, and raising the conditions of new appropriations of lands. He has obstructed the administration of justice by refusing his assent to laws for establishing judiciary powers. He has made judges dependent on his will alone for the tenure of their offices and the amount and payment of their salaries. He has erected a multitude of new offices and sent hither swarms of officers to harass our people and eat out their substance. He has kept among us in times of peace, standing armies without the consent of our legislatures. He has affected to render the military independent of and superior to the civil power. He has combined with others to subject us to a jurisdiction foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving his assent to their acts of pretended legislation, quartering large bodies of armed troops among us, for protecting them by a mock trial from punishment for any murders which they should commit on the inhabitants of these states, for cutting off our trade with all parts of the world, for imposing taxes on us without our consent, for depriving us in many cases of the benefits of trial by jury, for transporting us beyond seas to be tried for pretended offenses, for abolishing the free system of English law in neighboring provinces, and establishing therein an arbitrary government, and then enlarging its boundaries so as to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing the same absolute rule into these colonies, for taking away our charters, abolishing our most valuable laws, and altering fundamentally the forms of our governments, for suspending our own legislatures and declaring themselves invested with power to legislate for us all in all cases whatsoever. He has abdicated government here by declaring us out of his protection and waging war against us. He has plundered our seas, ravaged our coasts, burnt our towns, and destroyed the lives of our people. He is at this time transporting large armies of foreign mercenaries to complete the works of death, desolation, and tyranny already begun with the circumstances of cruelty and perfidy, scarcely paralleled in the most barbarous ages, and totally unworthy the head of a civilized nation, constrained our fellow citizens taken captive on the high seas to bear arms against their country, to become the executioners of their friends and brethren, or to fall themselves by their hands. He has excited domestic insurrections amongst us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. In every stage of these oppressions, we have petitioned for redress in the most humble terms. Our repeated petitions have been answered only by repeated injury. A prince whose character is thus marked by every act which may define a tyrant is unfit to be the ruler of a free people. Nor have we been wanting in attentions to our British brethren. We have warned them from time to time of attempts by their legislature to extend an unwarrantable jurisdiction over us. We have reminded them of the circumstances of our emigration and settlement here. We have appealed to their native justice and magnanimity, and we have conjured by them, by the ties of our common kindred, to disavow these usurpations, which would inevitably interrupt our connections and correspondence. They, too, have been deaf to the voice of justice and of consanguinity. We must, therefore, acquiesce in the necessity which denounces our separation and hold them as we hold the rest of mankind, enemies in war, in peace, friends. We, therefore, the representatives of the United States of America, in General Congress assembled, appealing to the Supreme Judge of the world, do in the name and by authority of the good people of these colonies, solemnly publish and declare that these United Colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, that they are absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown, and that all political connection between them and the state of Britain, of Great Britain, is and ought to be totally dissolved, and that as free and independent states, they have the full power to levy war, conclude peace, contract alliances, establish commerce, and to do all other acts and things which independent states may of right do. And for the support of this declaration, with a firm reliance on the protection of divine providence, we mutually pledge to each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. And from there, the Declaration of Independence continues with signatures from the men who signed it, representatives from each of the colonies who participated in its signing: Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina, Maryland, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Delaware, New York, New Jersey, New Hampshire, Massachusetts, Rhode Island, and Connecticut. Tells us more about the time in which the men writing it were experiencing. A time in which they felt oppressed, and in which they felt that their rights as human beings were being violated by a government far and away. And these things we've all heard, right? We've heard this story. We know how it ends. It ends with the United States coming out of a war with Britain, an independent nation. It ends with Cornwallis trapped at Yorktown. It ends with the arrival of our friends from France, and bringing about the end of the government of Britain's influence here in the United States. It ends with freedom and a fresh start. The foundation of the nation which many of you listening today are living in today. Free, whole and hail, to pursue the dreams and desires that you hold as an individual. Free to be whatever you want to be, whoever you want to be, so long as it does not infringe upon the rights of another to do the exact same thing. You live in this glorious place, a place where many nations have modeled themselves after. They've modeled themselves after these ideas. Now, it's true, it's very true, that many of these ideas are not unique to the United States. These men who constructed the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights were not on their own when they wrote these. These aren't just their ideas. Many of these ideas are inspired by philosophers such as John Locke,
And of course, Thomas Paine, who did a little bit of writing himself. Of course, you might know him more for his writing of Common Sense. This is just one of the pamphlets that he wrote. But most of the Constitution is heavily influenced by John Locke. The right of property, the right to pursue your happiness, the right to independence, personal independence. And John Locke was British, from Britain. And of course, it'd be foolish not to mention Rousseau. Jean-Jacques Rousseau is also a major voice, an individual who's Jean-Jacques Rousseau, another individual who's quite a heavy influence on the ideas of those founding fathers, and he himself is in turn influenced by what happens in America. And sees it as opportunity. The shackles of monarchy to become a free and independent nation themselves. Of course, they have a little bit of a road to get there, but they try, right? You can't deny the influence of Rousseau. First man who, having fenced in a piece of land, said, "This is mine," and found people naive enough to believe him. That man was the true founder of civil society. From how many crimes, wars, and murders, from how many horrors and misfortunes, might not anyone have saved mankind by pulling up the stakes or filling up the ditch and crying to his fellows, "Beware of listening to this impostor. You are undone if you once forget that the fruits of the earth belong to us all, and the earth itself to no one." Deny simply by reading that from Rousseau, the theory of natural human. And although men had become less forbearing, and although natural pity had already undergone some alteration, this period of development of human faculties maintained in the middle position between the indolence of our primitive state and the petulant activity of our egocentrism must have been the happiest and most durable epoch. The more one reflects upon it, the more one finds that this state was the least subject to upheavals and the best for man, and that he must have left it only by virtue of some fatal chance happening that for the common good ought to never have happened. The example of savages, almost all of whom have been found in this state, seems to confirm that the human race had been made to remain in it always, that this state is the veritable use of the world, and that all the subsequent progress has been in appearance so many steps toward the perfection of the individual, and in fact toward the decay of the species. And of course, Rousseau is the one who comes up with the concept of the noble savage, but you know, that's not as his ideas about the nature of man in the world and his pursuing of freedom. The idea that the earth belongs to us all, that this world belongs to everybody. That kings and corrupt, powerful men do not own the world that we all live in. It just convinced us all that they do. We ourselves, we as a human race, own it. These ideas, of course, could not have helped but influence thinkers and writers. And of course, you get the discourse on inequality. The passage from the state of nature to the civil state produces a very remarkable change in man. By substituting justice for instinct in his conduct and giving his actions the morality they had formerly lacked, then only when the voice of duty takes the place of physical impulses and right of appetite does man, who so far had considered only himself, find that he is forced to act on different principles and to consult his reason before listening to his inclinations. Although in this state he deprives himself of some advantages which he got from nature, he gains in return others so great, his faculties are so stimulated and developed, his ideas so extended, his feelings so ennobled, and his whole soul so uplifted, that did not the abuses of this new condition often degrade him below that which he left. He would be bound to bless continually the happy moment which took him from it forever, and instead of a stupid, unimaginative animal, made him an intelligent being and a man. As we look at Rousseau, you can see that in Rousseau's work, a moral inequality. And is evinced in differences in wealth, nobility, or rank and power and personal merit. The type of inequality is established by convention. He takes a cynical view of civil society where man is strayed from his natural state of individual independence and freedom to satisfy his individual needs and desires. So you can see that Rousseau, of course, had a hand in influencing our founding forefathers. And maybe they didn't take everything he said quite so. You could also take a look at Thomas Hobbes and his work, Leviathan. And even though Hobbes and Rousseau wouldn't necessarily agree, Hobbes has a different way of viewing the world. He believes in strong central authority. But yet our founding fathers are still reading him. Don't take the Constitution and the establishment of the Bill of Rights as meaning they don't believe in law and order as slap in the face to law and order. They preserve law and order by preserving the rights of the citizen. They encourage law and order. The Bill of Rights encourages law and order from the citizens of the nation by preserving their rights, their unalienable rights, pursue life, liberty, and happiness. Their unalienable rights to express themselves, to formulate new ideas, believe in whatever they want to believe in, so long as they don't harm the rest of the citizens. And that really is the caveat, the only caveat to your rights as a citizen in this country. No law shall be enacted that will infringe upon your rights as a citizen. But At no time shall your liberties overwhelm or outweigh another citizen's liberties. At no time shall your desire to pursue happiness override someone else's desire to pursue the same thing. At no time will your rights ever supersede the rights of another citizen in this country. We're all in this country because of the Bill of Rights. Equal. We all get the same rights. We're all equal and all have that same opportunity to protect ourselves, preserve our rights, and pursue our happiness. It's all about how we go about doing it. And I know a lot of people will say, but Dallas, we're not all equal. We're not all equal. Some people are richer than I am. Some people have it better than me. Some people don't have to work as hard as I do. But you have to think about it a different way. Equality doesn't mean that everybody has everything the same, exactly the same. It means, in this context, that we all have the right and the opportunity to pursue the thing we decide to pursue. And sure, we're all born, with our lot in life. We're going to be born, some people are going to be born into rich families. Some people are going to be born with a bit of an advantage. And that happens. That happens everywhere. That's just not here. That's everywhere. Some people are born stronger and bigger than other people. Some people are born healthier than other people. That's just the way of the world. There's nothing you can do about that. But where it's different is that here in America, where we have the Bill of Rights, as a citizen in this country, you have the same rights as a rich man. You have the same rights as a rich woman. You have the same rights as a poor person does. You have the same rights as any other citizen in this country. If you're a citizen and you're a law-abiding citizen in this country, you have the same rights as everybody else in it. So long as you don't attempt on another citizen's rights in pursuit of your own desires and your own rights, your rights as a citizen in this country will be upheld. You will have the right to pursue happiness. You have the right to pursue whatever dreams and designs on happiness that you have. You'll have the right to worship whatever god you want. Not some god that the state tells you you have to worship. You'll have the right to whatever political ideas that you want to have. You'll have the right to pursue an education. You'll have the right to fall under the pursuit of happiness. You have the right to those things. You have the right to pursue opportunity. You have the right to make your life spectacular, not because the Bill of Rights says so necessarily, but because as a citizen of this country, the rights, the Bill of Rights, the 10 amendments to the Constitution, the original Constitution, declare that your right, that you are safe to pursue those things. You are safe to pursue those opportunities. Nobody can take them away from you. By being a law-abiding citizen in this country, no one can take away your right to pursue your happiness, to pursue your passion. No one can take away your rights, version of yourself that you could be. Your right to finding happiness, to finding your grand purpose in life is preserved in this country because of this spectacular document. And that's right, this document is spectacular. The Bill of Rights is a tremendous, tremendous resource. Preserves not only your right to pursue happiness, it doesn't just preserve your right to religious freedom and your right to being safe from false imprisonment or transported against your will. It doesn't just prevent you from being arrested on without due process. This document provides you with the hope that your government is going to not only respect, this document stands as a testament to the government that we have established in this country, that we the citizens, we the people have the power. We are the nation. We are the people. We control the destiny of our country. And we always have. And we always will. This document guarantees that we the people have the power. We have control over this great country and its destiny. We have the power to make our country spectacular. And we have the power to do it together. And these documents guarantee us that power. You don't have to sit back at your home and worry about the future of your country. You don't have to wonder about what your country is going through. You don't have to wonder about it. You need only desire it. You need only unite with your fellow citizen for a nation that you want to see. To see that nation. It was the gathering of men just like me, and women just like many of you, men and women just like all of us, everyday individuals. And sure, there were people of greater standing, rich people, you know, middle class people, educated people, non-educated people. The everyday person was represented in this. Everyday people sacrificed and bled just like we sacrifice each day. But these people gave themselves up and put themselves on the line for something greater than themselves. The people who came before us had a grand idea. They wanted to establish a country where hope wasn't just a pipe dream. It was a guaranteed right. They wanted to establish a nation where ambition, where free, where the right to pursue your dreams was not only protected but encouraged. The people who came before us wanted to create a brand new world. They wanted to be a beacon for the rest of the world. Did they always get it right? No. Did our forefathers, were they perfect? Absolutely not. Thing they wrote down, absolutely perfect? No. But one thing they did that was absolutely brilliant was add the Bill of Rights. And the other thing that they did was add a process by which amendments could be made to this government. And they added in something special in those amendments. A clause in the government that stated, and we went over this, but a clause in the government that stated that the rights of the people to change their government shall always exist. The rights of the people to change their government. Government that represents their interests and protects their rights shall always exist. And in that, our founding fathers were brilliant, as they left the door open for every generation after them add and improve, to change with the times, to evolve, get better. The Constitution and the Bill of Rights were written by fallible human beings. And while they may have been fallible people, just like you and just like me, there's no question their idea of a free country founded by the people, for the people, and with the intent of preserving the life, liberty, in pursuit of happiness of the people would exist. And look at us now. It all started. All started on July 4th, 1776. After discussions for the previous couple of years, it all started July 4th, 1776. When our founding fathers got together and looked down the face of tyranny and said no more, stared down a future as servants, and said never again. Would there be bumps in the road? Absolutely. The subsequent generations that followed them did what they could to uphold their memory, to keep the dream alive. And when things needed to be changed, and when things got hard, we changed them. We made things simple again. The great thing about the Bill of Rights and the Constitution is that they're what we call a living document. It's a document that can be forever amended to. There is no limit to the amount of times we can add to the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. And there's something very special about that, because history has many pages that have been written on, but the future's pages are empty, just waiting for every generation to write their story. And the Constitution is like that too. It's waiting for the next generation to write its story. What kind of story will we write? 50 years from now, what story will we tell about how we pursued our happiness? What story will we tell about how we stood up for our rights as citizens? What story will we tell about how we embraced our liberty, how we sucked the marrow out of life? What stories do you want to tell? Ladies and gentlemen, this has been another edition of the Bareback Facts. Hope you guys enjoyed a breakdown of the Bill of Rights and the Constitution, and I hope you guys enjoyed getting a little bit of a taste of American history. It's not something I do very often. We got a little bit of philosophy in there. We talked a little bit about the influences of the founding fathers, John Locke, Thomas Hobbes, Jean-Jacques Rousseau. All these individuals not only played a huge part in influencing the writing of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights, but they also in turn found themselves influenced by the things that were going on in their time. There were men that existed, that lived during times of turmoil and formulated grand ideas about the world around them. And those ideas morphed into something special. I hope you guys enjoyed this. And before we go, I'd like to, again, suggest that you guys check out ConstitutionUS.com for a full-on look at your Constitution. Take a look at the Constitution and get familiar with it. It's always right there. With the Internet, it's always at your fingertips. So I recommend you take a look at that. You can also look at the National Center for Constitutional Studies, or nccs.net, to get your hands on some documents, not only the Bill of Rights, with the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and a number of other resources that are available. You know, America's founding documents. You can get all the amendments. You can take a look at a number of articles written by historians, young scholars, and individuals who've taken the time and put in the effort of studying a time that really marked the beginning of where we all are today. So I recommend you all take a look at those things. I hope you guys enjoyed this show, and I'll see you all next week. Enjoy the rest of your week, guys.